It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Today is Friday. It is the start of the weekend. By the time you're listening to my voice, you're either already starting your weekend, or by the time we're done, you're headed home for the weekend. You know, a news story broke yesterday morning about some sort of a 12-hour lockdown at Dugway Proving Ground in Utah. And I got an instant message from my good friend and guy who's actually, I just filled in for him now, Dave Champion, about that, because I used to be a contractor at Dugway, and he says, what do you think of this? And I responded, well, here's what happened. I guarantee you, somebody in the Kemmer Bio Lab, most likely the Chem Lab, misplaced a vial of some sort of agent or agent simulant. Meaning a simulated agent. But most likely, if it's a lockdown, it's a real live agent. So they locked everything down until they found it. And somebody is going to find the thing. It was just misplaced. Sure enough, about 3 hours later, that's what came out. That's exactly what happened. It's basically, you've got the lab geeks that are in there, as we refer to them. If you work in the bio lab as some sort of a scientist, or the chem lab as a scientist, you're either bio geek or a chem geek. Anyhow, it just was the loose terminology that we use there, and I'm sure they still do. And sometimes these guys used to goof around by putting some sort of a simulant that would look like, and in initial, like visual tests, act something like an actual agent. And sometimes they put that in a little vial and hide it in somebody's pack, because everybody gets searched when they're coming out, going in and coming out of these different labs. And that came to an end a few years back because they'd had enough of that. So that's pretty strict. But of course they locked down everywhere. And by the way, Dugway is spelled D-U-G-W-A-Y, not D-O-U-G-W-A-Y. And it's Proving Ground, singular, not Proving Grounds, plural. It's like out here in the desert in the Southwest, we have the Spanish Trail. Not Spanish Trails, it's one trail. It's one ground at Dugway. The one large ground, a little bit larger than the state of New Hampshire. That is the Proving Ground. So, it's a difference between magazines and clips as well. I mean, anyhow, I digress. But that's what went on out at Dugway. And not surprised. And it's right, they should lock it down. The thing is, though, the base commander is probably going to be a little bit ticked off about this whole thing, because everybody that was locked down after the hours they were supposed to go home, guess what they get? If they're not on salary, they get paid. And there's a lot of people who aren't necessarily on salary. So that's going to cost the base in more ways than one. And the interesting thing is, that sort of thing has happened at Dugway before. It will continue to happen. The thing is, since it lasted so long, it was a 12-hour lockdown of the nation's premier chem and bio weapons testing facility. It lasted so long, it ended up getting the attention of the news. So anyhow, that's what happened there. We're going to move on here to something a little bit bigger and badder, and that is this. The ATF and qualifying the sporting use of firearms. Now, back with the 1968 Gun Control Act of 1968 officially, they limited to where the ATF could manage the sporting use of guns, especially when it came to importation. They won't allow any sort of military use because they didn't feel that military sort of use or militia type use of shotguns should be allowed. So the Gun Control Act of 1968 is essentially unconstitutional since, it's not essentially, it is unconstitutional, that wording of sporting use, since the ruling and D.C. versus Heller and Chicago versus McDonald versus Chicago. The sporting use clause has really been done away with. However, the ATF is still acting on it. They recently released a report considering banning certain imported shotguns. And judging from their conclusion on page 14, the only sporting shotguns that are out there or overseas even need to apply. They say, quote, "Our determinations will in no way preclude the importation of true sporting shotguns, when it will certainly prevent the importation of certain shotguns. We believe that these shotguns containing the enumerated features cannot be fairly characterized as sporting shotguns under the statute. Therefore, it is the recommendation of the work group that shotguns with any of the characteristics or features listed below not be authorized for importation." Great. Well, let's make the jump for the list of non-sporting features of the ATF hit list. Here we go. Any one of these: folding, telescoping, or collapsing stocks. Okay. A folding, telescoping, or collapsing stock is best used for transportation and storage. Makes it easier. Let's see, a bayonet lug, a flash suppressor, a magazine over five rounds, or a drum magazine, meaning a detachable magazine, really. Grenade launcher mounts, integrated rail system, other than at the top of the receiver or barrel, that would mean out front for a light. Light enhancing devices, excessive weight greater than 10 pounds for 12 gauge or smaller. Excessive bulk, greater than 3 inches in width or greater than 4 inches in depth. And forward pistol grips or other protruding parts designed or used for gripping the shotgun with the shooter's extended hand. So, if you happen to own any sort of a shotgun with even a single one of those features, ATF is about to stop the importation if it is imported. The Saiga 12 has been having a big run since this came out. And guys, we need to really get on this. Because in light of the Heller and McDonald decisions, sporting use is out the window. Yet ATF is still working off the draconian 1968 Gun Control Act, saying, hey, we have the authority to do this. Even though the bill itself wasn't completely slammed in the decisions, those decisions gave information to lower courts to say, these sorts of things are unconstitutional. The ATF isn't listening. And they're still looking to ban the importation of what they consider non-sporting shotguns. That means you and I can't buy them. The government can have them. Remember this. Tyranny is defined by that which is legal for the government, but illegal for the citizenry. That is tyranny, according to Thomas Jefferson. Stay tuned, guys. There's more to come after the break. We're going to talk about a cop that shot somebody while trying to turn on a flashlight. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
All right, folks, listen up. I have an announcement. We are putting together, I am putting together, a three-day long-range precision rifle course. Talked about it on the show a little bit yesterday. It is 3 days, April 15th, 16th, and 17th. We're starting on April 15th because that is the deadline for taxes, which the vast majority of Americans, by law, do not owe. But the IRS, through all of their wonderful scheming, makes it nearly impossible to get out of paying. Not totally impossible, just very, very difficult. So, you can always go online and go to taxrevolt.us, order up Dave Champion's book, Income Tax Shattering the Myths, and learn all about it. Nothing in there is refutable because it is fact and law and instructions on how to get out of the system. So anyway, we're going to start this class on April 15th. It works out perfectly because that's a Friday, and the class is a three-day class. So April 15th through 17th, right out here just outside of Las Vegas. Everybody can get in and out of Vegas. And April is a beautiful time of year to be here. Wonderful weather, plenty of sun, which is exactly what we're expecting. Most long-range precision rifle classes tend to get the shooter out to maybe 500 or 600 yards on paper, and then going through the data book and through that data book, logging the shots so you can get some repeatability, so you understand how to set up for those shots. This class is going to take everybody's gun out to where the round will no longer be predictable because the flight path drops off, which means we're going to go out to a minimum of 1,000 yards on paper. If your gun will continue to hit, continue to fly and continue to hit, even as far as 1,350 yards, we'll do that. If your round will go a mile, we will have targets set up at 1 mile so that you can have 3-round groups. You look and see where the 3-round groups hit. Make any adjustments that we need to. Do another 3-round group. If we need to make any final adjustments from there, then we'll do that as well. And this is going to be on a fairly quick-paced precision rifle class when compared to most. By the way that the range is set up, by where the way that the targets are set up. It's limited to just 20 people. It's also half the price of most precision courses. Most precision courses are $200 to $300 per day. This is $100 a day. It's a $300 course. You need to have a gun that is capable of shooting 1 minute of angle or better. Better is preferable, of course. It's a better gun. 1 minute of angle is defined as a 3-round group fired at 100 yards, and on paper, they strike in a 1-inch circle or smaller. 1-inch group at 100 yards, 3 rounds. Now, we're talking about bolt-action, longer-range precision rifles. We're talking about some of the higher-end semi-auto rifles. Maybe you have an AR schedule that's chambered in .308 that'll shoot minute of angle or sub-minute of angle, smaller than that. You need to have a good scope, something that has some sort of range-finding capacity, be it a mil-dot scope, maybe it's a mil-dot 2 reticle, an MOA scope, a loopholed scope with a TMR reticle, something with a range-finding reticle. Needs to be easily adjustable with target turrets, where you don't need to take off a cap, adjust it with a device, put the cap back on. It's got target turrets where you can adjust it. And also a base with probably 20 MOA built into the base. That means that the back of the base is higher up than the front of the base. You cannot shim a standard base because the angle of the holes where the screws mount into the receiver of the gun will be off. So you have to have an actual real-life 20 MOA base is the best way to go. If you already have gear that's set up, that's great. If not, to get good gear. Now, I suggest going to samplelist.com, samplelist.com. It's part of SWFA.com. A lot of scopes are getting put on there now because they're at the SHOT Show. These are all scopes that have been out of the box and used in one manner or configuration of another. They have Class A, which is like new. Class B shows a little bit of wear. Class C, you can definitely see some wear on the scope. Maybe it was mounted on a gun and test fired and given back to the manufacturer. They're all discounted. When it comes to bases, I recommend going to KenFerrell.com. I believe that is F-E-R-R-E-L-L, KenFerrell.com. They have all of the bases, 20 MOA bases. You can go with either an aluminum base or a steel base. Find one for the receiver of your gun. If you're not sure which it is, call them. Talk to Ken himself. Tell him exactly what you've got. He'll grab the base and he'll send it out. And his bases, they're a little over $100, like $110. It's a great price for a fantastic rail. It's awesome. I happen to have one of his scope bases, one of his rails, and I also got my scope off of Sample List. So I'm shooting to straight just the way that I do it. Now, we also intend to shoot at a moving target at 300 yards. Give everybody a chance, not just shoot at, but hit a 300-yard moving target, which is about as far as you're going to want to do it in the field. If you're out there, say you're shooting at a moose or a deer or something, it's just walking along the trail. We're going to give you, provide to you, teach you the skills to do that. All this for $300. Where do you sign up? Let me tell you where to sign up. Go to victoryshoot.org. Victoryshoot.org. I will also, over the weekend, get links up to that on 2aradio.com and billcarnes.com. So you can go up there, click, and sign up. Now, by the time we're done with the show, everything should be set up e-commerce-wise, so you can go in there and sign up. There's one of two ways of doing it. Either pay for the class in full, $300, or we're going to offer, if you don't have the $300 right now, maybe you need to secure a little bit more gear, a $100 deposit. That's a non-refundable deposit because we're going to get the other $200 30 days before the class. So you need to have that paid up by March 15th. If you cannot get it paid up by March 15th, 30 days before the class, then what we have to do is take that $100 from everybody who's out there and use that money to start advertising to get last-minute participants for them to come in. So that non-refundable $100 is going towards advertising the class without very much leeway towards people to come in there and fill up those 20 spots. Only 20 spots. I've written the curriculum. I've written many of these curriculums. Curricula. I'm running the class. You get to meet me. Come out here. We're going to be doing shooting. We anticipate having a neat deal with one of the guys coming out. You need to try and get it all lined up to bring out his 50 caliber rifle. And anybody that wants to shoot it can come on out and bring, you know, 5 or 10 rounds of 50 themselves. We'll give you the specs on that. You order it up, bring it out, and we'll shoot at 1 mile. How many people can say that they shot and hit at 1 mile? So we'll give you the opportunity to do that off of a small ridgeline. That would be pretty cool. All of the specs are on victoryshoot.org. You need to have 300 rounds of match-grade ammo. If you brew up your own ammo in your basement, that's fine as long as you've got your formula. All that liability is on you with the ammo. Otherwise, you've got time to go and search out and find match-grade, like, you know, boat tail hollow point match grade ammo. So go to victoryshoot.org to check that out. Sign up. Only 20 people. Got it? So we're going to come back and get to that story I talked about earlier where a cop shoots and kills a guy while trying to turn on his flashlight. Stay tuned. We'll hit that as soon as we return. This is Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
All right, guys, welcome back. A New York cop tries to turn on a pistol-mounted flashlight and fatally shoots a man, and the family of the man, a suspected drug dealer, Michael Anthony Alcala, is suing for negligence. The shooting of an innocent, unarmed, elderly Bronx man. Now, it's interesting that they said he's a suspected drug dealer, but now they're calling him in the, I think it was the New York Post, I believe, the innocent, unarmed, elderly. Okay, let's just say the shooting of a Bronx man by a cop who was trying to turn on a pistol-mounted flashlight is at least the second accidental police shooting in the U.S. involving that flashlight model. But unlike Saturday's shooting of 76-year-old Jose Colon, who survived the cop's bullet to the stomach, an unarmed Texas man died October 13th under what reportedly were strikingly similar circumstances. involving a Surefire X300 flashlight. The family of that man, suspected drug dealer Michael Anthony Alcala, is suing for negligence. Okay, so I'm sorry. The guy in Texas who died a couple of weeks ago was the one who's a suspected drug dealer. The guy in New York is an innocent, unarmed, elderly Bronx man. And he was shot and wounded, but not killed. Let's see. Derek McDonald, Surefire's vice president of marketing, insisted, "Our product is safe, has been proven safe, used in a safe manner. It doesn't lead to accidents. It prevents misidentifications and saves police lives." Let's see. Colin was shot during a drug raid Saturday in his Soundview apartment when Officer Andrew McCormick tried to turn on the flashlight mounted under the barrel of his Glock 9mm pistol and instead pulled the trigger. Okay. I have a Surefire X300, and I have it mounted onto a Glock. I don't see how I could possibly get to the trigger and shoot the gun when trying to turn on the flashlight because of where they operate. You've got to be a complete knucklehead to do this. Of course, it's happened twice, both times with cops. Now, cops have crappy firearms training. Even a lot of the guys who are on SWAT don't have that good of a firearms training program unless their department budgets for it. They believe they have good firearms training because they're cops. They should have it. So, since they should have good gun handling, they should have good firearms training, they should be good shooters. I gotta tell you, I hate hearing when somebody tells me, I'll get an email from a listener or somebody that I know, or I meet someone, "Oh yeah, I learned how to shoot. My brother-in-law, who's a cop, showed me." Or a friend of mine whose husband was a cop, he came out and showed me. Wow. Wow. That's like learning to drive from somebody who's only driven in demolition derbies. The firearms training for most cops, and we're talking well over 98% of the police departments in this country, haven't got the slightest clue what the hell they're doing on the range. They get these guys that can shoot reasonably well, and they make them instructors. You know, even if you can shoot, and some of them can't even shoot well. They know somebody who knows somebody whose brother-in-law makes the decision to put people on the range, and they want that cushy job to look all high and mighty. They suck! And until we revamp from the bottom up, or maybe in this case should be from the top down, since a lot of these people are juiced into their positions, until you can teach someone anything, you shouldn't be on the range. I would much rather have someone who's a good teacher, who hasn't got any clue how to shoot, working on the range, than someone who's a shooter that hasn't got any clue how to teach. I can take someone who's an excellent teacher and teach them how to shoot, and they'll make a much better firearms instructor than someone that knows how to shoot and can't teach their way out of a paper bag. And until we get this fixed, innocent people all across the country are going to get shot, injured, and killed by cops who don't know what they're doing because their departments don't know how to teach. As you can tell, I'm a little bit passionate about this subject. Not a big fan of non-shooting cops. And it's not all entirely their fault. Some of it is, because they could care less. There is a certain percentage of cops out there, and every cop that's out there will tell you that there's a certain percentage of cops that are essentially social workers that are carrying a gun because they're mandated to. Is that who you want to have showing up to your house when you call the cops? Which brings up another good point. You know, people who are anti-gun aren't really anti-gun. They're anti you and I as civilians having guns. Because when they call the cops, what are they doing? They're calling for someone who has a gun. They're not against that cop's gun. They're against you or I having it because we're not cops. It's not anti-gun. It's anti-civilian population having guns. Which turns us from citizens into subjects. Hell, if we don't have guns, who's going to have them? Cops and criminals. And if you're calling someone with a gun because they have a gun, you suck because you should have a gun. And if you don't, you are falling far short of the definition of a patriotic American. To be a patriotic American, you believe and exercise in your freedoms. You have the right to free speech, and you exercise it. You have the right to practice your religion, and you exercise it. You have the right to keep and bear arms, and you exercise it. You have the right to keep your mouth shut when some government agent is trying to get you to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk until they can build a case against you and hose you down the line. You have the right to shut your mouth and fly the bird off to them and let them go chirping away with silence, which is all you're given to them. And you should be exercising that kind of a right. Pardon me. No, don't pardon me. I meant every word of it. Guys, I'm going to move on to something real quick here. Let's move on here. There's a newspaper in Bakersfield, California called the Bakersfield Californian. And somebody wrote in there about wanting to ban all the handgun ammunition after their assembly bill that was passed, supposed to go into effect next month, was ruled unconstitutional, as it was. Here's a response. It says, I take exception to a part of the Californian's January 18th editorial, quote, most gun laws produce misfires. In regards to the California law requiring thumbprints, photo ID, addresses, etc. for those who purchase handgun ammunition, what do they mean by handgun ammunition? Most ammunition can be used in rifles and carbines specifically designed for those calibers. Ammo for .22 caliber rimfire firearms comes immediately to mind. And what becomes of these lists? When a government bans handguns, it will have the address of everyone who purchased handgun ammo. The Second Amendment is, in part, about having the means to resist a corrupt government that can no longer be controlled by the people. This is not the sort of information I want my government to have about me. Fortunately, a Fresno County Superior Court judge struck down the implementation of this law as unconstitutionally vague. This came from a guy by the name of John Schuler out of Bakersfield. I have to applaud John Schuler because he's right on target. Pun intended. When the government wants to start banning things or controlling things or registering things, it's all about knowing what you've got because they're going to want to make sure they have more. Like this garbage in the southern states where they want to know if you buy more than one rifle at a time so that they can come hassle you at your house. Stay tuned. More to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
All right, guys, welcome back from the break. Now, you all know that there's a lot of U.S. officials in Pakistan, and one of those U.S. officials used a gun to stop a couple of armed robbers and shot and killed them. A U.S. consular employee shot and killed two gunmen as they approached his vehicle in a congested street in Pakistan on Thursday. A pedestrian was also killed by a speeding American car trying to rush to the scene and to help. The U.S. State Department confirmed that an American employee was involved in the incident in Lahore, Pakistan, but could not provide details. Police officer Umar Saeed said the men were suspected robbers, but provided no evidence to back up the statement. He said the American, who was not identified, shot at the men in self-defense. Western diplomats travel with armed guards in many parts of Pakistan because the risk of militant attack. Lahore, has seen frequent terrorist bombings and shootings over the last 2 years. Through the city's small expatriate population has not been directly targeted. Let's see. Lahore Police Chief Aslam Tareen said that the American was being questioned by the police and may be charged with both murder and illegally carrying a weapon, a Beretta pistol. The American shot both men after they pointed guns at him at an intersection. Really? You might charge him with murder for defending himself. Let's see, quote, diplomatic staff usually enjoy a certain type of immunity, but I am not sure about murder, he said. We will consult with the Foreign Office and legal advisors in this regard. So you can tell the mindset of the police chief, Aslam Tareen. He wants this American to hang for murder. When a couple of his scumbag countrymen work up on this guy with guns, and he gets out and defends himself. Police officer Tarif Maraj later said that a murder case was officially registered against the American, and another case was registered against two other Americans for killing the pedestrian. So, are Americans allowed to defend themselves in Pakistan? No. We're only allowed to be victims there. Yay! You think this is bad? What do you think that the anti-gunners are trying to do here in America? If a bad guy's coming up to you with a gun, they'll have more rights than you will because you won't be allowed to defend yourself. If you do pull a gun and shoot them down, you'll be arrested and charged with murder and having an illegal gun. Let's see, the gunman approached the American's vehicle on a motorbike, said Saeed. The American managed to alert colleagues in a car behind him who hit and killed a passerby as they rushed to the scene. Local TV showed footage of what it said was the American's car, which had several bullet holes in the front windshield. It also showed one of the gunmen lying dead next to a motorbike with a pistol on the ground nearby. The other gunman was shown being placed on the back of an ambulance and appeared to be wearing a holster. So, that means if gunshots are in the American's car, they got shot at by these scumbags. In Washington, State Department spokesman P.J. Crowley declined to identify the employee involved, but said the individual is still in Pakistan. He said the incident is under investigation. Americans have been targeted in Pakistan before. Well, of course they have. In the northwestern city of Peshawar in 2008, gunmen shot and killed an American aid worker as he drove to work. Suspected militants also opened fire on the vehicle of the United States' top diplomat in the city that same year, but she survived the attack. Street robberies are not uncommon in Pakistan, and foreigners would be perceived as lucrative targets in the rather poor country. Lahore is a city of about 12 million in eastern Pakistan, not far from the Indian border. The United States has a small diplomatic mission here. 12 million people. That is 1.5 times the size of our largest city in America, New York City. While the facts of the incident are still being established, it may add to anti-American rhetoric in the country. Of course it did, because we didn't put up with their crap. A few dozen people protested outside the police station where the American was being held. They burned tires and one of them held up a sign saying, American dog. Really? We have kept you, Pakistani people, from becoming under the rule of the Taliban. You were next. You'd be under the rule of the Taliban for several years now had we not stepped in and smacked their little behinds around in Afghanistan and kept them from coming back to Pakistan to take over. Keeping in mind, the Taliban started in Pakistani universities and decided Afghanistan was a nation that could be taken over easiest, build up, then move home to Pakistan, a nuclear power. Thank you, America. We kept, you kept us from becoming slaves to the Taliban warlords. Great. Now, this American dog is a scumbag for killing two of our street thug scumbags that we're going to shoot and kill him. Continuing with the story, sections of the Pakistani media are prone to fanning right-wing conspiracy theories that frequently feature armed foreigners roaming the country at will, violating its sovereignty. The United States is pumping millions of dollars in aid to the country, but many people still regard it with suspicion or outright, enmity. They don't like it. We want to make sure that a tragedy like this does not affect the strategic partnership that we are building with Pakistan, and we'll work as hard as we can to explain that to the Pakistani people, said Crowley, the State Department spokesman. Great. What are you going to do with the American? Now, here's the deal, guys. It used to be that if an American is wrongfully held or taken hostage or captured anywhere overseas, the U.S. government does everything in their power to get that person back. They fight tirelessly to do it. However, that hasn't been the case in the last 30 years or so. As soon as Americans started getting taken hostage in Lebanon, they didn't work very hard to get them back because they knew it was politically delicate. It's okay. We can let a few people go. This guy in Pakistan, this American, did nothing wrong. He defended his life against armed bad guys who were obviously shooting because American cars were riddled with bullets. They didn't shoot their own damn cars. He stopped murderous thugs, shot them dead, and now he's being charged. Really? So, had he been just laid to rest because he was shot and killed by these guys, unarmed, didn't fight, laid down, what charges would go to the Pakistani gunman who killed him? Would they have even been charged? Or would it, it's just an American, somebody that worked for the diplomats, an employee, we're not going to worry about it. If we find him, we hear something on the street, fine. We're not going to go after him. Great. So what do we need to do? What do the guys in Pakistan need to do? What do the Americans in Pakistan need to do? If they get involved in something like this, shoot and kill, then rush off to the American embassy so that they can't get caught by the Pakistani government because they'd be on neutral American soil? Is that what they have to do? Will the United States government even fight for these guys? I'm saying guys, because not just the American who shot the two Pakistanis dead, but the other two guys that were in the car that were rushing to help him that hit and killed a pedestrian. Not really excusable, guys. Is it understandable? Yeah. Should they face charges? The driver of the car, that car face charges? Maybe. We have to find out the specifics. Should the American that shot and killed these two armed jackasses, these a-holes on the bike that were shooting them up, should he be charged? Absolutely not. Illegal possession of a gun and murder for defending his life. Really. Now, I pose this to you anti-gunners sitting out there. Let's say that this was on the streets of Los Angeles where you're not supposed to have a gun and you pulled out yours and shot and killed a couple of druggies that were coming after you. Really? I'm sorry, pro-gunners. And would you be charged? Yes, just like in Pakistan. What about the anti-gunners if you were in that spot? Would calling 911 have saved your ass? The answer is no. Guys, have a great weekend. Go to victoryshoot.org and sign up for the class.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com. I will not.